Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Richard Sachs, who is the executive producer of the Gaia film production, Frequency of Genius. This is a compilation work of many of the leaders in spiritual medicine, consciousness research, and sustainability that has been put together to educate people. And Richard is here today to talk about the DVD. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Dr. Kolb.
How you doing?
Good, thank you.
I enjoyed Frequency of Genius. It's got a lot of people I'm familiar with, some of which have been on the show. Anyway, would you like to tell us a little bit about how you came to do this work?
Well, I'm very passionate. Hopefully it comes through in the film in regard to sustainability and connecting the dots, because there's so much going on today, and everybody's getting hit by, you know, environmental this and pollution that, and there's so much at play as far as the big picture, the gestalt. And I wanted to, in this film, connect a lot of the different disciplines and really address, you know, the solutions therein, because it's one thing to know about the problems, but I really, in a very direct way, wanted to connect with the solutions. Because it can be overwhelming. I mean, I used to be, if we go back many years ago, in my 20s or 30s, you know, I knew about a lot of the pending issues with supposed global warming and all the other gloom and doom of 2012. And There's so much at play presently that it can overwhelm anybody. And so getting back to your original question, the thought behind, the vision behind the documentary was to showcase seven unique individuals and to see that, wow, a lot of the physics, the math, the food, the architecture, the economics, the spiritual, it's all interconnected. It's not disjointed.
That's correct. And, you know, there's two views you can take. Just like with anything, you can either go spiral downward or spiral upward. And I think the people in your Frequency of Genius compilation work show us how to spiral upward rather than go into fear and then more negative emotions with what is happening. And yet, at the same time, talk openly about the problems. And they all, you know, it's amazing to me, many, many of the problems are interconnected with the current geopolitical and exopolitics that are occurring, and that's rapidly changing. That's what's so exciting. There's rapid changes in the global picture that are bringing the balance back to more hope and life affirming practices rather than the way we were going before with the terrorism and the money problems and just a huge amount of all the things you mentioned before, GM foods and chemtrails and everything. So there's a lot of hope out there. You know, there's a lot of hope that things are going to turn around.
Yeah, I think, they will turn around. I'm positive and, I'm optimistic about the future. Hopefully, this 1984 Orwellian kind of fascist worldwide kind of global thing that's going on. I do believe there's awakening, and I just can't speak to how many numbers are awakening, but there definitely is a big ocean of change that is in front of us, and I wholeheartedly welcome it. And may you live in exciting times, as they say.
Well, we do. I was reading yesterday and today some of the new stuff on David Wilcox's website, and I'd encourage all my listeners to go there to learn more about what we're talking about today, because David has has some really interesting.
Very much so with the
website right now that are exciting.
Just the energetic changes and so forth that are going to be going down.
Right, right. So, but anyway, let's talk a little bit about how you chose these people and what their areas of expertise are, and a little bit about what they had to say in the DVD.
Certainly. Well, the first one would be G. Edward Griffin, and a lot of folks know him. He's a writer and lecturer, and he wrote the book, The World Without Cancer, and then The Creature from Jekyll Island was another book, interestingly enough, that was highlighted in the documentary, which would be The Creature from Jekyll Island, and how the Fed met in secrecy off the coast of Georgia, actually, off
right.
of Jekyll Island there. And exposed the Fed scam. I think a lot of people, you know, if you would say 10 or 15 years ago, they would be like, what are you talking about? You know,
right.
the federal, it's just, they just really didn't really see the connection with the Federal Reserve being like FedEx. I mean, they're really not the real federal government kind of thing. They're a privately held corporation.
Right.
Is what the Federal Reserve is. And Mr. Griffin's done an excellent job of exposing that kind of dynamic and scam that's been, you know, put upon the American people of, you know, that this money basically is just printed out of nowhere. And I don't know, it took me a while for myself to understand that years ago, about what Mr. Griffin was talking about, but when I did get his book, it was quite clear because it was bulletproof. And the reason why I put Mr. Griffin in the documentary is because I tried to pick it apart the best way I could, and I could not. And he backs everything up, and he cites everything. And nobody really has been able to, you know, debunk what Mr. Griffin has put in his book.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the, I mean, David Icke talks about connecting the dots, and that's really what you have to do with this. You know, the whole thing about Kennedy, the Kennedy assassination, the reason behind that may very well have been that Kennedy was in the process of dismantling.
Yeah, he wanted to abolish the Fed. Yeah.
And anybody, you know, mess with anything, but don't mess with my money is, you know, once you start messing with
yeah.
money, then consequences come down. And it came home for me when I heard that Putnam, I think I'm pronouncing that right, who was the president for life in Russia, of course,
mm-hmm.
as we know,
said right.
the global economy should not depend on one country's printing press. So, you know, that says it all. You know, the global
well, the bankers,
economy
yeah.
is dependent on, you know, the cabal's printing press. And that's something that... That Griffin really was the main person that pointed out that this system exists.
I think it really nailed it, you know, with the petrol dollar and, you know, the paperback fiduciary money that we use,
mm-hmm.
you know, is backed by the reserve currency, which is the you know, we're the reserve currency. It's backed by the oil
right.
and all this kind of stuff.
And it's collapsing now.
Sure
evidence
is.
That... U.S. dollars are not being accepted overseas. Well, what does that do
so
to all of our bases and our diplomatic organizations?
Well, we've been downgraded, too,
yes,
as far as our credit.
Absolutely.
And it's all unwinding to what speed or to what degree is a big question mark for everybody
right.
because we're not privy to the cabal and the kind of like the creeps that are running the world presently. The poor manager is what I call them.
Look at David Wilcox's website. I was just reading it. No, I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. The details are all on it. It's a new post. The details are all on it. And I was going, oh, my goodness, isn't this connecting the dots?
It is amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
It's just absolutely incredible. But like you said,
fascinating.
Once you understand, the thing I love about it is, one, and that's why I really like Frequency of Genius, that once you understand all of the interconnections between all of the economic, the health problems we're having, I think Gabriel Cousins does a great job of explaining why we're all not healthy.
Yeah, that would be our segue into Dr. Gabriel Cousins. You're
right,
so right, because, you know,
yeah.
Fool me no more kind of thing is the way, I hope that was intentional with Frequency Genius, because we're all at different levels. And so to think, it'd be a little bit silly to think that everybody's at the same level. I mean, you know, you never stop learning. I certainly am not, I haven't given up as far as connecting more of the dots. It's,
mm-hmm.
It depends on how deep you want to go with this stuff. But I do find it fascinating, as you mentioned. But with Dr. Gabriel Cousins, he's quite a fascinating man.
He is.
He's a medical doctor, psychiatrist, and doesn't practice anymore. But he has a Tree of Life, and they're out in Patagonia, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And he does biodynamic farming and veganic farming, kind of like what Rudolf Steiner was into.
Right.
And he really, really is up to speed. For those folks that are not familiar with Dr. Gabriel Cousins, he's quite amazing, you know, a wealth of wisdom and knowledge as far as health issues and, you know, just seeing the whole gestalt picture, the big picture of what's going on present day. And what I really find refreshing about Dr. Cousins is that he has the solutions.
Yeah, he does. Now, Dr. Cousins, I first was introduced to him with the book Spiritual Nutrition, and he brought into that concept that frequency was important, that sometimes when you crave, say, a purple grape rather than a green grape, what you really are trying to get is the frequency of the color.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? And then in Frequency of Genius, he expands on that even more by explaining how the frequencies around us that may be discordant are disrupting our frequencies, and then how disease is really frequency disruption. And so what I really love about him is his exploration of frequency medicine.
And that's great. It's to add on to that, it's quite amazing when you think about cellular phones and cell phones, is that they could be as a resonant frequency that would be healing. And Nikola Tesla knew about this. And, you know, everything is at a certain frequency and energy state.
Right.
Everything. You know, a rock, us, computer, telephone, everything. So it's quite alarming when you realize that the powers that be are kicking out cell phones that actually damage us at the cellular level, when they could actually put out a healing frequency. And Nikola Tesla knew this, and this is a fact.
Oh,
so it's quite amazing when we get into the Frequency of Genius that Nikola Tesla and other people like him really had the solutions, Dr. Kolb. And when people awaken to this fact, it opens up a whole new vision of what this matrix is about.
Yeah, but there are technologies out there that can either suppress the frequencies that are dangerous. That was researched by the U.S. military. Or it actually change the frequencies to something beneficial. And I have both of them on my cell phone, just in case the other one doesn't work.
So the point is, redundancy.
You don't have to get rid of your cell phone. You can
right.
You can use technology that is adopted by the U.S. military. I was in the U.S. military for 13 years. I can tell you, they do not do something unless it works. Okay, you know, it's like the military is very results driven, and since they put radio headphones in all the helmets, they didn't want all their troops getting brain cancer, and of course they were privy to that research. I had Dr. Carlo on the program a couple of times when he did the research. So, the military, if the military is using it for a practical purpose, I'm interested. it probably has a practical purpose.
Well, the thing is, the best way to say it, in my humble opinion, is technology's neither good nor bad. It's how
right.
it's utilized. And
exactly.
You know, we have cell phones, we have some amazing technology, and I'm a big proponent of technology if it makes sense and it's not for the enslavement. However, having said that, most of the technology that we see is used for the enslavement of humanity, not for the betterment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I have issue, like any other human being on this planet. It's poorly managed, but it's the point I want to bring across is that there are folks like Tesla and Victor Schallenberger, Rudolf Steiner, that they do have the solution. So it's kind of it comes back to like the individual kind of thing of like, instead of the herd mentality, what are you going to do individually? Because when all the dust settles, we do live in crazy times. And I guess it's always been that way, or perhaps the planet's always been set up this way. But it is an individual kind of thing because, you know, you have a choice to use a cell phone or not to use a cell phone. So a lot of this stuff, but when it comes to other kind of things like, other kinds of things like vaccination, where they're forced. See, that's where I have a big issue. Like smart meters. Right. A lot of people in California don't want the smart meters, yet the powers that be are making sure that everybody gets these microwaved EMF pollution smart meters in their neighborhoods, and this is not a good situation. So even when the masses don't want it, they go opposite exactly what they want, going against their wishes and what would be to the betterment. And this is what I find very disturbing. However, it comes back to the individual kind of dynamic that is playing out in today's world. And it's not like anybody, one particular person, has all the solutions, that's for sure. So, but I think the Frequency Genius is it's kind of interesting because if you're at the advanced level, you're like, wow, I learned something. But if you're in the beginner, it's kind of like, whoa, this is overwhelming. And if you're in the middle, you're kind of like, well, I knew a little bit. I didn't know that much. So it has something for everybody as far as, you know, the dynamic seven people that are in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about Jonathan Clinton.
Yeah, he's an artist, and he's into sacred geometry. And sacred geometry is very fascinating because it's fixed geometry. You know, you get into the platonic solids, the five platonic solids, and from those five basic archetypes, you pretty much get everything else when you scale it, as far as the iterations and the complexity of nature and so forth. Does it always translate? Not always, but, you know, it's quite amazing the sacred geometry, how it plays out like, you know, a fork. If you ever look at a fork, you'll notice that it has that phi ratio. The way you have the handle and then the sharp part of it, and then your arm, if you extend your arm, the phi ratio of the distance in your hand and your whole arm, and then the elbow distance, or between your eyeballs, or the distance between your nose and your mouth and your chin. It's quite interesting what he brings to the plate in the film.
Well, we actually, in plastic surgery, study that. Because in plastic surgery, you might understand we have to reconstruct people's faces and create. I had to create when someone's face was destroyed in a drunk driving car wreck. You have to know all of those ratios to do that. So sacred geometry is used in plastic surgery.
It's quite amazing, you know, if you think about it, in school, Dr. Kolb, it's very interesting that it's very cold and calculating the way they teach geometry.
Mm-hmm.
But when you listen to Jonathan Clinton, he brings forward the beauty of geometry.
Mm-hmm.
And the sacred part of it is no less fixed. It's fixed geometry. I mean, this is, as far as we know in this universe at least, this is the way the geometry plays out.
Mm-hmm.
And the archetypes of a flower. And a lot of people know, like, the seashell. And the nautical, the nautilus, and the turns and the windings of a daisy, and so forth. Our eyeball is circular. The center of our body, the torrid, as far as this spinning circular dynamic that plays out a lot in nature, like. If you remember when you were a kid and you are like, you have a rubber ducky and you let the water out of your bathtub and you know how it spirals down and spins, that toroidal action, that's how nature cleans itself. And somebody like Victor Schallenberger, who we quoted in the Frequency Genius, he made quite clear nature should be your teacher. You know, let nature be your teacher. And that really resonated with me. And Jonathan nails it. as far as seeing all the interconnections of sacred geometry with nature and the physical reality and beyond. So it's quite amazing.
Yeah, I think to understand how consciousness creates matter in the third dimensional world, and understanding of sacred geometry is absolutely essential. I don't think you can really understand the process of creation without that. So it's an important part of the of the frequency of genius. Let's go on to David Wolf.
Yeah, David Wolf is quite amazing in the film. he had gone above and beyond food. He is known for, raw food and optimum health and the catchphrase, have the best day ever. And he's quite a dynamic individual who is on top of things, has connected a lot of what's going on with food and economics and all the other disciplines in the film. And he's a big proponent of superfoods, which basically, in a nutshell, is very densely nutritious food, is the best way of saying it. So, with the factory farming that's going on and the GMO and all the other crud, the Frankenstein food that's out there with fast food and sodas laden with, GMO sugar and all the other crud, he really is the antithesis of that, polar opposite to that. And he's like the beacon of light to express that, hey, look, you don't have to be sick. You don't have to have pharmaceutical shots with laden vaccine with thimerosal and all the other crud. And just look basically underneath the surface of, like, who really is benefiting here? Pro bono, So I get really excited when I talk about David Wolf because he really is amazing, traveling all over the world present day and, really telling his truth, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jack Fresco. Is that how you pronounce his first name?
Yeah, Jacques Fresco. Yeah.
Jacques Fresco, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, Jacques Fresco is, like, I think 95, and a lot of people know him from the Zeitgeist thing that Peter Joseph put out. And interestingly enough, Peter and I filmed 1 week apart.
Really?
Yeah. And but anyways, his Zeitgeist skyrocketed to number one on the internet, the most viewed internet on the piece on the internet, and Jacques was on it. And or mentioned in it. And then, with Jacques, he's quite an interesting individual. He was interviewed by Larry King back in the 70s, and Larry King stated the fact that, man, you scare me. He was so visionary, ahead of his time. And he's really known for architecture, sustainability, very much a futurist, but very grounded in the social engineering, which I know is controversial and so forth, but needless to say, he has a lot of the solutions to the engineering, of architecture, as far as designing cities that are functional instead of the stupidity of having cars that pollute and come into the cities. He doesn't allow any cars to come into cities. He uses light rail. He uses it using sacred geometry, and it's in a circular fashion. Is way you have the center city, and then from going out of the city, it's in a circular fashion, which is inherently more intelligent. So you don't have the pollution, you don't have the car issue. All those variables of stupidity are now gone and washed away from these cities. Because the cities that we live in today, according to Jacques Fresco, are totally unsustainable. And thus the rampant violence and just, feeling like a sardine. And it also, too, on a side note, it gives the illusion that we're overpopulated, which is a bunch of bunkum. Because you could fit all of the entire population of this planet in Australia and still have Queensland to boot. And I think you'd have, a quarter acre or something like that. Quite a fair amount of land to be left. So this whole notion of, overpopulation, when we look at these cities, it's totally ridiculous the way that we plan them. And that's why I really like Jacques, and I put him in it, because he's been around, obviously, a long time. He has a lot of wisdom. You may not agree with everything he has to say as far as a social engineering standpoint, and maybe he hasn't fished out everything, although he thinks he has. Nevertheless, you can't deny that his designs are really neat. Is it for everybody? That's not the point. The point being is that the cities that we have right now are not functional, and they're inherently stupid. So that's pretty much my take on him.
Why don't you tell us what you really think?
Because I could talk and talk with Jacques, because, you know, he's been around with us for so long, and
right,
yeah. He's quite an amazing individual.
Yes. I mean, in the DVD, he has these actual buildings that are floating downstream. He actually puts buildings on things that float. It's really neat.
Well, here's an interesting tidbit. When I visited him, we were filming on location, you know, he brought out his plans and rolled them out, and they were so exquisite and so attention to detail. I mean, no stone unturned with this guy. And interestingly enough, the people in Dubai, back when they were building that monstrosity, they called upon Jacques, and they actually, this was around the Gulf War, I believe, is what he stated, and to cut to the punch, they actually outright stole his designs, and this is when the Gulf War brewed up, and they pulled a fast one. They never acknowledged his designs. But that isn't it interesting, though, for those listeners that are familiar with Jacques' work, you'll find that his designs are very much like Dubai's. Mm-hmm. The structure, the building as such, not like so much the way the city's laid out, but the structures themselves as such.
Yeah. Well, if you have really good stuff, people try to steal it. That's well known.
Yeah, it's the highest form of flattery, right?
It is, yes. Okay, let's see. We've got Nassim Haramein. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he wrote the Schwarzschild proton paper, and I'm not going to proclaim I understand the math, although, you know, in a nutshell, he really, in a fundamental way, is trying to understand the structure of the most elemental. And he feels that it's like a vortex kind of vacuum kind of action. The best way to, I guess, is just to visualize it. We put that piece in the film as far as, because words don't do justice. But basically, you can look at it as like a donut, okay? And you have the center, obviously, and things go in, through, and out, and over. And that's how nature works, is that it has this vortexing, opposing action. And it's quite an interesting theory. And things subdivide down to this basic archetype, is basically what he's stating. And that a lot of the physics that has been taught is grossly inaccurate and misleading and incorrect, which I do find refreshing, because when you study Nikola Tesla, Victor Schallenberg, and Rudolf Steiner, you realize that the physics that's taught in college and in schools today is a joke. It's totally incorrect. So I would assume that his work would be the segue to free energy, which would be a threat to the power base, because the powers that be clearly have made it clear their intention that they love to go on with oil forever, I guess, to the detriment of everybody else.
Right.
So it's like a party, hooray for them and the hell with us. But the downside of that is that that's not the way nature works. Nature has abundance. It's the culture of life, not the culture of death. And I find Nassim very refreshing, and that's why we picked him for the film, because he really fundamentally is addressing the fact that, wow, you know, we don't live in a scarcity model. We live in abundance. And whoever put us on this planet wants us to have clean water, clean air, and plenty of food and abundance. And that's basically his message. But then he gets into the mathematics and the physics of it, and, you know, people are welcome to study more of that in depth.
Well, the first evidence I had of this idea came from a book called, I think it was called The Cosmic Egg. It was by Bintoff,
mm-hmm.
who was a physicist who is now deceased, but that was a book. He was a physicist who had great vision, and probably the first physicist to bring in the idea that Nassim is talking about. And that's that the universe is actually a giant donut, but it's like a torus. It's not like a donut that's just short, it's long, okay? So if you read A Cosmic Egg, you'll see how he describes it. And probably some of the same principles. I think probably Nassim has put it more into mathematical,
But he makes it very accessible, though.
Right.
And that's one thing that I like is that, you know, he does do lectures, and he does have the Resonance Project in Hawaii.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is that they either talk above you or below you, and he basically is talking at his group that he speaks to, and it is accessible. I mean, it helps to basically get down the fundamental geometry, like the Platonic solids and the phi and the Fibonacci series and all that fundamental stuff. But let's be clear, though. He did not get this from a vacuum. Nobody does. And, you know, if these people are seeing way, way past what we see, Dr. Kolb, it's because they're standing on the shoulders greats who have come before them, as that cliche or quote, however you want to say it. Because, you know, having studied myself a lot of this material, I realized that a lot of the books are there. You know, this notion that, you know, to remain ignorant or just like, oh, Jesus, this is too difficult. No. That really isn't true today. With the advent of what's on the internet, with the immense amount of publishing that's going on more than any time in thousands of years, it's quite amazing the amount of information that's coming through today, and a lot of people can understand the science and the math, and you know, get a bigger picture of what's going on and what's at play fundamentally, I should say.
Yeah, I think if people understood that the things that if you revealed these secrets in the past, and you were a member of one of these secret societies, you would be killed. And yet now, this information is on the bookshelves at, you know, Barnes & Noble. I mean,
isn't that the truth? Yeah.
And, you know, I picked up a book the other day on secret societies, and I looked in it, and this stuff was, the stuff revealed in these books, you would be killed for if you had revealed it. It's that powerful, because you can use it for creation, you can use it for manifestation, you can use it for good or evil, you know, I mean, either one. It, like you said, it's not the techniques that are inherently good or evil, it's how you use them and who's using them.
And well, I mean, Leonardo da Vinci, case in point, was like one of the highest masons. I mean, he knew about the wheel of life and the Merkaba and all this other stuff, and
it's in his work.
Yeah, the seed of life. It's pervasive. I mean, a lot of people don't realize, you know, the libraries that are out there that supposedly, you know, destroyed. You know, like when you look at the Alexandria, supposedly, joke, these books, you know, burned down, all this jazz, but really they were sequestered. Who knows where they had gone? But, you know, the information's out there for people to draw their own conclusion. I mean, there's an amazing amount of information that has been taken away from humanity. And Carl Jung, you know, he really studied the Eastern tradition along with Aristotle and so many of these amazing people throughout history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Carl Jung realized that there was something incredibly awful that had played out in the human psyche, something so awful and cataclysmic that it's beyond measure, beyond words. So clearly Carl Jung is an interesting person to study because, you know, he knew something devastating had happened to humans maybe, I don't know, 50,000 years ago or whenever it happened. because we really are like children today, Dr. Kolb. I mean, we really are. I mean, it's like there's a whole history that we don't even know what we're about, and it's been held. It's been held from us.
Do you know what the word religion means linguistically?
Well, religios. Help me out.
I think it's. Well, I just read it on actually on David Wilcox's site, but yeah. It's in an interview that's really interesting. But I think it means to bind or to, you know, to restrict somehow, to bind.
Well,
and if you look at that was what Zeitgeist was all about. If you look at the way religion has been used, not that spirituality or what some religions teach is not worth learning.
Sure.
But if you look at the purpose of the creation of the religions, I think that was what got us. I think that's what was so so damaging.
Well, I think there's multiple programs of mind control running on this planet simultaneously.
Right.
And I'm a firm believer that, you know, in certain countries they're running this program, XYZ, in the United States, XYZ, you know, with all the mindless consumerism.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and the manufactured, you know, terrorism and all this stuff. But, you know, I think people are wise to this stuff. Again, I wish I had a crystal ball to realize how many, because at least I don't feel like the only one anymore. So there's a quickening. There is a hastening that's going on. But getting back to the Ridgeland part of it, there is, like most things, 99%, well, let me back up for a moment. As far as religion, I believe that there's always little pockets of it that that's accurate, but then it becomes bastardized over time.
Right.
And it becomes a business. And today, you know, in my opinion, I feel like all the organized religions are a business. And there's major mind control going on within every single one of them. And I think when people really start to study some of the more esoteric, more hidden knowledge, they'll kind of arrive at their own truth anyways, because that's just, you know, it's just a personal journey kind of dynamic playing out with everybody.
Because
I think we're all here for different reasons, you know?
Yeah, I think one thing that you learn by being in a religion is that when you give your power away to an outside authority, it has
a big no-no.
It has consequences.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's not either, you know, you learn either way. No matter which path you take, you learn. A spirit says this physical reality is a self-adjusting system. If you go off the path, you get batted back on it. You know, and if you go off of it too much, you might get batted out of this dimension and then come back in and learn it again, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's why the Bible says the wages of sin is death, and sin being an ancient Aramaic term that means to miss the mark, you know, it's an archery term. So really you can't, because we're eternal, you really can't make a mistake. You can get set back, you can, you know, lose your ground, so to speak. You know, you can have to come back in and get all of your degrees again, and get all your, you know, I mean, certainly it can be.
Well, nature doesn't waste anything.
Right.
So whatever person's going through, nature recycles, and I totally agree with what you're saying in that regard. It's
that's why you can't really judge anybody else, because you don't really understand their path unless you have the ability to read their Akashic records, which, you know, you shouldn't do without their permission, you know. So.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, it is a personal journey, and it's best to arrive at your own conclusion and your own synthesis, and that's the best way to do it, because when all the dust settles, it's really, you know, it gets kind of bizarre at certain levels, you know, just like at the quantum level, and then you have the level we're at. I mean, a particle will act like a wave in a particle. It's like, what's up with that? And then at our level, it doesn't do that. So it depends on what kind of scale we're talking here.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, you know, this planet appears, it has the outward thing that it has been set up for this kind of like, dynamic for quite some time. So these people that think, oh, you know, it's going to be this and that, and it's like, well, you know, hard to know.
Mm-hmm.
But
let's see, have we talked about everybody? What about Joe Marcella?
Yes, that's the last person that we didn't talk about, I believe. Dr. Joe Marcella is the spiritual side of it,
mm-hmm.
and less so the religious aspect of it. Kind of like is the glue that binds and sticks everybody together. I put
okay.
him in and interweaved him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he did a good job, you know, of synthesizing a lot and digesting a lot of what these other men were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then with his own viewpoint, I mean, he died a couple times. I do have issue with that because clinically, you know, from a clinical psychologist standpoint, you know, I don't believe death, clinical death, of course it's defined differently, okay, when there's no more brain activity, but a lot of people have near-death experience. He's had several, and so he's gained insight. My only issue with that, though, to play, you know, a devil advocate here, is that he wasn't actually dead. So I know it gets in a gray area, which you consider, you know, flatlined or absolutely clinically dead. But when your brain is starving for oxygen, sure, you're going to have all these visual hallucinations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of intriguing to have him in the film because, you know, a person that states that he's died two times and, you know, has worked with a lot of literally thousands of people. From a spiritual standpoint, it was interesting to have him in the film.
I was interviewing, I'm trying to remember which author this was, but it was a book on near-death experiences, and they had a case where a woman was undergoing a really difficult operation on a tumor at the base of her brain,
mm-hmm.
and they used this technique where they cooled her way, way, way down, and then completely... She was totally flatlined. There was no, I mean, she was under this condition for a long time because of the surgery. And so she was actually clinically dead, I mean, in every way.
Yeah, but for how long, though? Many days?
Well, for...
because the body, because we have how many bodies? We have the etheric body, we have the astral body, we have the physical
yeah.
body. So it's like, what body are we talking about?
The physical was,
mm-hmm.
was dead.
Mm-hmm.
According to all the clinical things that we define that with.
Mm-hmm.
And she was actually the only one that was so well studied because
mm-hmm.
she was obviously being monitored. She was in an operating room.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a near-death experience
mm-hmm.
where she left her body, described everything in the room, described what instruments they were using and what they were talking about, the private conversations during the surgery. And so she is actually the best demonstration that this is probably true. In other words, we have a higher body that we can maneuver around in, if you want to call it the astral or whatever, that can leave the body, and the body is clinically dead, no question, and then yet can return to the body when the hypothermia is reversed.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the people who study it said she really is the proof. So you have at least one person who is definitely clinically dead and was brought back to life.
Well, I mean, everybody would define it differently because, like, for me personally,
mm-hmm.
I would want them dead for several days and then be brought back. Then I would be like, okay, this is more of like really, really dead, however you define that. But for me, it would be several days because... You know, so, but...
Well, there's an article you need to read by Larry Dossey, then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on death. And it's exactly on what you're talking about. All of the historical cases of people who were thought to be dead for days who were brought back. It's a fascinating article.
Yeah, I'll have to read that.
But if you Google it,
okay.
You'll see it. It's not a book. It's an article he wrote. And he
mm-hmm.
just collected all the world information on it.
Well, I've always been intrigued by near-death experience, and my
mm-hmm.
beef with it is that they've always been dead for, like, maybe a couple minutes or a couple hours, but nothing like you hear a person that was dead, like, a week, and they came back and they resuscitated them, and he had these amazing
well,
things
Larry's,
to say.
article because that, I mean, one of the people was totally dead and the was having an autopsy done. I mean, he'd been dead for days. And when the guy made the incision in his chest, you know, the sternal incision, the guy sat straight upward, documented.
Yeah, there are a lot of, like, I've read these journals and a lot of science journals.
There are these anomalies.
Yeah, I mean, I've read a lot of them, and it's quite amazing. A lot of people don't realize how many bizarre anomalies there are in the scientific literature.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you got to go. Like,
yeah, Larry's whole point for writing the article is that death is a process.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like 1 minute you're alive, 1 minute you're dead.
But
and I never realized it before. I mean, I really never realized that death is such a process.
Well, I mean, if you die in a car accident, that's not good either, because you're not really ready for death. It comes so quickly.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of the spirits that die in car accidents hang out at the hospital. I've spoken to quite a few of them. You know, they don't know they're dead.
I know that through different photography, especially with electronic photography now, they're seeing these orbs, where in before, you know, with the film emulsion, they didn't see them because, I guess, the silver halides and different emulsions. But I know it, myself, you know, doing a lot of filming with both film and video, I see these orbs, you know, in different cave areas and different places around. And when I was a teenager, I used to photograph a lot up in Pennsylvania and in the nature area, and I was like, man, what's with these orbs? Interesting.
Yeah, they're all over now.
But now I better understand these orbs. So for those that are listening, just Google orbs. It's quite interesting stuff.
It really is fascinating. I have a book on orbs, but I haven't interviewed the author yet, but I may do that sometime. Well, anything else you want to... Well, let's talk about where they can order the DVD, Frequency of Genius.
Yeah, it's if they go to frequencyofgenius.com, then they can watch a trailer. There's bios. There's you know, other information on that page, and they can get a pretty good idea. Again, that's frequencyofgenius.com.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the audience? We have about 5 minutes left.
Well, real quickly, subsequently doing this film, I didn't have a lot of time in the film to put in like a lot of interesting Eastern like Vedic information. And for those that really want to go deep with this stuff, if they Google Vedic mathematics or just the Vedas, they'll come up with a wealth of information. It's up to yourself, obviously, to discern what's the real deal and what's not. But they're still translating a lot of the Vedic information. These are texts that are thousands of years old. Nobody really knows where it has come from. And one thing to underscore, it's not religion, and it's not religious in any way. It's information that was through the oral tradition, and then they had written it down. So the Vedic knowledge is quite incredible. It talks about architecture, food, music, mathematics. Nobody, and I want to underscore this too, nobody can learn all the Vedic information in a lifetime. But having said that, it's quite amazing. I mean, it translates to everything into modern times. And the reason why I bring this up subsequently after the movie is because the Vedic knowledge and knowing that nobody really knows where it's come from, whether it was off-planet or just a bunch of brilliant people over thousands of years that saw the interconnectedness of everything. Nevertheless, you can't deny that that body information is here on this planet. And I throw that to anybody who has any inkling of curiosity to really research it. It's quite amazing.
And it goes back to what we were saying before, stuff that... you know, you might have to join secret societies, you know, in the 50s or even before that, or you might have to pay a lot of money for it or whatever, is now freely available on the Internet. So, you know, it's really amazing.
I've never been a proponent of societies or secret societies, and I always have shied away. I don't belong to any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right, Dr. Kolb, is that all this wealth of information is out there. It's an ocean of knowledge. You just got to be willing to just tap into it.
Right. And, you know, you can start anywhere. People ask me, where do you start? You start with what you're interested in. You let your own inner guidance be your guide. So say you have an interest in astronomy. Well, that'll get you into it. So will an interest in astrology. You know,
well,
so will an interest in, you know, reading tea leaves.
It's funny you mention
it
that.
It doesn't matter. You know, it'll
yeah,
all
because
go to the same place.
It's funny you mention that because astrotheology and the Vedic knowledge goes into all kinds of advanced, I mean very advanced, mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at astrotheology, that's quite amazing. You know, a lot of folks should just Google that, astrotheology. It's just quite amazing information in that regard of exposing so much. And but yeah, it's just a lot of information.
So, what's your next project?
My next project?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. Well, we do have other projects in the making, and nothing to really bring up right now. But it's going to be along the same lines of the Frequency Genius and the fact that it will be educational, entertaining, and solution-oriented.
Okay, great. Well, when it comes out, make sure you... bring me over a disc like you did this one.
Sure.
We live in the same town.
Yeah.
And come. I wanted to invite you too, if you would be interested in doing noetic science.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I'll get you that information.
That'd be great.
We would really love to have you do that.
That'd be
I'm
great.
I'm not sure if we don't do it in December, but.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually doing November because my book Optimism is coming out. It's a
collaboration
work with Jimmy Carter, Warren Buffett, Steve Jobs, Queen Noor, Prince Charles, Meryl Streep, Michelle Obama, a bunch of other people, writing chapters on optimism. Some are not alive anymore, like Eleanor Roosevelt and Helen Keller in there. So it's work across time. But I'll be doing that in November. It's the third Thursday. The October Noetic Science is actually, Sherry Murray is doing that, and that will be this week, this Thursday, at the Dunwoody office. But January and February, I'm going to have to see. It's a definite possibility. I'll have to check with the person who scheduled that.
That sounds great.
I'll get you together with her. And it's put in the newsletter and everything we announced on the program, so that'll get you some exposure.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Have otherwise, and you know, Noetic Science is Edgar Mitchell's consciousness research organization, so it fits right in.
Yes,
and people that come to that are very, very interested in the subjects on frequency of genius. So.
Sounds exciting, yeah.
So great. Let me just go through what we've got for the rest of this month.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing the Optimism book with Stephanie Marone, who is the editor of that book, next week, and I don't have the book yet, so that's a problem. Anyway, then Colin Bennett, this is a pre-recorded program. He's on the 29th of October. He wrote a book called Flying Saucers Over the White House, and that is the story of the Blue Book Project, which is fascinating. And so I pre-recorded that several months ago because he was in ill health. And then on the 5th of November, we have In Search of the Miraculous, Healing into Consciousness. And then on the 12th of November, Insights into Lyme Disease. So that should be interesting, too. So that gives you a lineup of the shows.
Well,
I really want to thank you for joining us today, Richard. It's been a great conversation.
And, thank you so much.
Like I said, I'll get in touch for Noetic Science. And please let me know when you've got your next DVD out. I'd love to have you back on.
Absolutely will. Thank you so much, Dr. Cole.
Great talking with you. This is Dr. Susan Kolb. We have been interviewing Richard Sachs, the producer of Frequency of Genius, a Gaia Film Productions. And you can look that up on the Internet along with the other the Vedic information that Richard gave us today, which I plan on looking up. And please join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.